But this DOD intelligence guy, and I was fact checking him all through the Zoom call, and he is everywhere. He'd talk about Rumsfeld. I'd Google him and Rumsfeld, and there they'd be together. I said, let me ask you a simple question. Is the Clinton Foundation trafficking children? And he said, absolutely.
This rip of TFTC was brought to you by River. It's the best place to buy Bitcoin. Go to river.com/TFTC and enjoy this episode.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
How hard has inflation hit you?
It hit me hard. It's hitting me hard.
Who do you blame for it?
I blame the federal government at this point. If a working class mom who works as a paralegal cannot buy a $2 bell pepper because it's now $5. Imagine a mother living on food stamps. Mm. Imagine a mother who's making minimum wage trying to feed children. Mm. They're killing us without killing us. If you understand that. They're killing us without telling us they're killing us. They're hurting people in ways that they can't help themselves. It's either feed my child or, well, how about feed my children, and I don't, but I have to go work.
Apparently, inflation's only 1.5%. People aren't feeling it.
Yeah, it's almost non-existent.
It's insane at this point. I mean, this is why we started with the cold open, because we were talking before we hit record. You were tweeting earlier that you're in a pissed off mood because somebody is running with the White House Bureau of Labor Statistics line that inflation's only at 1.5%. It's been tamed.
Well, I also was a little pissed off because there's some smart people who seem to be signing off on the trueflation metric. And to the extent that it comes in looking like the CPI, then I know it's bullshit.
What is the trueflation metric for people who are unaware of it?
Well, I haven't dug into the protocol, so I should be careful, but let us, it is now an inflation metric for, I think it's a CPI for those who are embarrassed to use the CPI. So I think it's a reconstructed CPI so that you can pretend like you're not lying your ass off. That's my best guess. Someone has figured out how to, and I've even seen, you know, sort of ravings about how great it is because how close it tracks the CPI. And I go, well, the reason we need a trueflation metric is because we need one that doesn't track the goddamn CPI.
Yeah.
And so I mean, the CPI's got so many holes in it that it's outlandish. It's just a pack of lies. And you can see it in the protocols, right? It's not the answer that's a pack of lies. It's the protocol. So they, you know, like they measure the cost of housing by using the OER metric, equivalent rent. And that literally is a survey in which they ask you how much could you rent your house for. And unless you are Melody Wright or someone, you have no idea. So it's a stupid survey. I wouldn't know how much I got to rent my house for. And no one can. You know, if you wanted to do that, just ask Airbnb, right? How are rents going, right? Mm-hmm. Which I wouldn't support that either, but it would be closer. And so they use OER, and then they use all the hedonic adjustments that the Boskin bullshit artists came up with years ago that said, you know, everything you're buying is better, which, by the way, everything I'm buying is worse. I mean, it's all just sacks of crap, you know, breaks. It can't be fixed. It's, you know, you try to get help from someone at any organization. You can't find someone who knows what they're talking about. Try to get health care, try to get anything. Everything just sucks. So then I saw someone post the 1.5% inflation rate which then gets the market all jacked up because then they say, oh, now the Fed's going to lower rates and therefore we're all going to be saved. And that turns out to be bullshit. Even if the Fed lowers rates, they're not all going to be saved. But you know, I look at something like, you know, John Williams' shadow stats, which is, I think, itself has been probably vilified enough by the mainstream that people shake it off. But then you go to the Chapwood Index, and it's just like John Williams. And so here's the question I like to ask people. So let's say inflation is not 1.5% or 2% or 3% like they've been saying lately, and let's say it's got another 4 or 5% on it, which if you ask that black chick who you just had on the screen, she would say at least that, right? She said a bell pepper is not $2, it's now $5, right? Now I can see it. I used to buy sliced turkey for, you know, four and change a pound, and now it's in my grocery store, and it's not some fancy schmancy thing, it's just Tops, is now $13.99 a pound for all the sliced turkeys. All of them are $13.99 a pound. It seems high because I've seen it cheaper than in other stores, but you get the idea. And so if we assume that inflation is running much hotter, then here's one of the implications: the GDP is inflation corrected, which means therefore one could make the argument that since the GDP is running somewhere between sort of 2, 3, 3.5, that one could argue we've been in a recession for years.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, that can't be because, well, they say that because the idea is that recessions only last like a couple of quarters. What if our economy has been shrinking for years? What if the fact that NVIDIA is $3 trillion has nothing to do with our economy? Right? What if all these metrics that people use to measure our economy are totally missing the fact that everything's getting pounded relentlessly? And so I was pissed about that. And now you got guys who are talking about serious players who are talking about we could go into deflation. I go, what's going to deflate? Give me something that's going to deflate. And it invariably is going to be an asset. So I think in the tweet I referred to it as you're going to call for the Fed to save your fat assets. And you could make the argument that's a form of deflation when your NVIDIA goes from $3 trillion to $500 billion, which I'm confident it will. I just saw Huawei is about to take NVIDIA to the cleaners. NVIDIA's vendor financing, it's a scam operation, best I can tell. And the guy's got a history of it. The CEO's got a history of nefarious.
Really?
And yeah, he's one of those guys where you go, look in the past, dude, pay attention to what he was doing years ago. There's rumors that there are at least 35 independent companies buying from them or their vendor financing. So what are they doing? They're selling chips to these guys, lending them money to buy the chips. Meanwhile, one of them's a cannabis company, for example. They have no reason to buy chips. What are they using for collateral? They're using the chips. So now you can see that we're just whizzing around in circles here. And I'm not sure about this number, but I heard 5,000 AI startups. Now, maybe it's 500, but it wouldn't shock you it's 5,000 because anyone who can write code has probably got an AI startup at this point. They're selling chips to these companies. They are between the 5,000. Here's the analogy you like. They're about as valuable as the bottom 20,000 cryptocurrencies. and so they're all going to buy chips, and then they're all going to go bankrupt, and then there's going to be no market. And then the big boys like Microsoft and stuff, they're going to say, well, you know, kind of a downturn. We don't need any more chips for a while. We need to sort of sit on our cash. And then NVIDIA is going to have no customers.
Yeah.
That's the end of NVIDIA.
The hardware collateralized debt is a lesson we learned in the Bitcoin mining industry in 2021. And it's not a good lesson.
Is that right? Tell me about it. Tell me about that.
There was a bunch of lenders that came out and basically offered these lines of credit that were using the mining ASICs, the computers that mine Bitcoin, as collateral. And the industry quickly learned once the bear market came that that was a shitty debt instrument, because the price of the hardware is tightly correlated to the price of Bitcoin. So the price of Bitcoin.
I'm shocked. And they probably were not getting, unlike the smart guys, they were probably not getting super cheap energy, right? The right miners are parking their, you know, mining operations sitting off Iceland or something, right? I mean, they're. These guys are paying, you know, if these miners are paying, you know, New York City utility bills, they're going to have trouble making money too. So,
yeah, and it was expensive debt too. It was from like 12 to 15%, depending on who you went to.
Oh, that's guaranteed to collapse then.
Yeah. It wasn't necessarily like the vendor rigmarole that you were describing with NVIDIA. However, I mean, it is similar enough where if the scenario that you laid out, all these AI startups go bust and can't pay their bills, that's going to flood the market with hardware that needs to be sold off to pay back investors and the collateral in those GPU backed debt instruments is going to go to zero. People are going to get margin called.
And the bottom line, this will take us to a big, big, big issue soon. But the bottom line on the inflation story is that it really comes down to the fact that what people are calling deflation is simply taking the froth out of markets. It's just that's their definition of an inflation, a deflation. You go, oh, we're going to go into deflation. I go, yeah, the piece of shit you own right now is going to go to zero. I'm not willing to call that deflation. If you watch, you can look at the money supply. Here's one for you. You probably know this, but your audience may not. If you actually plot the S&P corrected for inflation, and instead of using the CPI, which we know is a sack of shit, you simply use the M2 money supply, which is a pretty goddamn good metric for how much money is out there, right? And I think the Fed stopped reporting it because maybe they saw that would get embarrassing at some point. But if Ron Grice did it, and if you plot the S&P 500 for 100 years corrected for the M2 money supply, it's gone down. It is down. Mm-hmm. If you correct it for inflation using the M2 money supply and then add in, treat it as a total return package where you include dividends, it's compounding at 3.9%, which happens 3.7%, which happens to correspond almost exactly to the number in 1999 Buffett said is all you can expect to get. Now take away taxes, take away fees, take away all the frictional costs, you're back to not making any money. And they say, well, I've gotten rich. Wait till they squeegee your ass out of the market the next time. And you go, you know, I really haven't gotten rich. Right now you feel rich because you're at the end of a 16-year boom that's Fed driven, that's money printed driven.
Yeah. And in the, it's probably going to get worse, right? Because I think what happened in Japan last week, many people, Jeremy Siegel come out and be like, you need to cut rates by 75 bips now and then another 50 bips next month.
Speaking of assholes.
Not realizing that it would just exacerbate that unwind of the carry trade. And so
he had to walk that back. Did you see him walk that back?
I did not see that. I did not see the walk back.
He had to walk that back because a lot of people said, Jeremy, you're just blowing it out your ass. That was stupid. Don't do that. He called, you know, 150 basis points in 15 seconds sort of rate cuts. I'm going, and that's because the market has dropped, 8%? Yeah. Even Guy Adami went out there and said, this is just stupid. This is just ridiculous. Yeah. Now, if Jeremy Siegel had a half a brain, which I don't think he does, and he could see turbulence inside the credit markets and he wants to make that case, then I'm at least willing to listen to him. But if he's talking about how you need, you know, 150 basis point cut because equities have dropped after a completely unfounded roid rage, then Jeremy Siegel should retire. He should shut up.
This episode was presented by River. River is the best, most secure place to buy Bitcoin in the United States. Go to river.com/TFTC, set up an account today. You'll be able to DCA into Bitcoin without paying any fees. You'll be able to give people Bitcoin via River links. You'll be able to send and receive Bitcoin over the Lightning Network. And you'll be able to set limit orders. If you want to buy Bitcoin at a particular price below or above where it is now, you can set orders to buy Bitcoin when it hits that price. Go to river.com/TFTC and set up your account today. This trip was also brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. Unchained is building a financial services platform for a Bitcoin standard. They have over 7,000 clients that are securing over 90,000 Bitcoin with 12,000 keys on their platform. Their platform leverages Bitcoin's native multi-sig properties. Their cornerstone product is their vault product, a 2 or 3 multi-sig vault, which allows you to hold 2 of 3 keys in a multi-sig quorum. That gives you full control over your Bitcoin. They also have an IRA product, a lending desk, and they're rolling out a bunch of other products, including an inheritance protocol and sound advisory. So go to unchained.com, set up a call with their concierge onboarding team today, tell them that TFTC sent you, and use the promo code TFTC at checkout. Unchained.com.
It feels like, what's going on in Japan? It feels like the Fed needs to hold steady for at least.
So how leveraged is the Japanese? How do you measure the leverage of the Japanese carry trade? So in a nutshell, it's my understanding, is that Japan did two things. First of all, they raised rates by chicken shit amounts of basis points, 15 basis points, I think, off of zero.
Mm-hmm.
And on the one hand, you go, that's not a lot. That's not exactly, you know, whack in the investor. But at the same time, coming off zero means that they increase the interest on Japanese debt by infinity. So there's that multiplier problem. And then they sold $34 billion worth of debt into a market where there was no market previously. So they were buying every shred of the Japanese debt being issued. And so the Japanese bonds don't trade. They just go straight from their treasury to the Bank of Japan. And literally, supposedly there were days where a single Japanese bond did not trade. That's how broken the Japanese debt market is. And then, so now all of a sudden, who's going to buy those? Well, there's guys who have levered the shit out of every possible investment using the yen carry trade. And all of a sudden, the Bank of Japan just said, sorry, it's over. How much leverage does the carry trade represent? I was looking for that. And I could, you know what you find? You find bullshit plots that go back 12 months.
It's got to be enormous. I would imagine. Yeah.
Like enough to destroy the financial system.
Yeah.
On
that topic of government debt, I mean, it's beginning to creep here in the U.S. too. I mean, you had the yield curves inverted right now. You had the 10 and 30 year auctions are actually absolutely piss poor. Last week, you have the Treasury opening up the buyback window for the first time since 2001.
I didn't see that.
Oh yeah, they opened it back up in March. So they're essentially admitting like there's no demand for this shit, so we'll buy it from you.
And something like $17 or $20 trillion worth of debt's going to roll over real fucking soon.
Yeah,
and there's going to be no buyers. Russia's not going to buy it from us, I'm told. China's not going to buy it from us. I think it's possible the Arabs are not going to buy it from us, because we're sitting there supporting the one country in the Middle East that they'd like to bomb to oblivion. So I think we have lost. And, you know, who's going to buy that debt? The answer is the Fed.
Yeah.
The Fed.
Yeah. It's a crazy time right now. Like, all this is going on like the economic side. And I wonder if it's a coincidence or somewhat intentional, but leading up to the election, everything going on with that, like we've been doing this for 5 years now. This is, and it's probably true every time I record, but this is the most chaotic time.
Well, it is true. It's like saying the markets are at an all-time high. Well, tomorrow they'll be higher.
Yeah.
The average person doesn't know what valuation means. I find it frustrating, so I'll post something about valuation. And they'll say, well, that's because, you know, they're debasing the currency. I go, no, because valuation is where you divide the price by something that is also being debased. Earnings, book value, you name it, right? GDP, it's all being fucked around with by debasing the currency, yet the valuations are still going up. They've been compounding at 3% a year for 40 years. They're not supposed to compound. Valuations are not supposed to compound.
Why is that? Because you just hit a natural limit of growth that...
Well, the valuation tells you what your return's going to be. So if it's a... Let's use PE. I hate it because they rig them, but let's use it because it's mentally easy. If the PE's 10, it means you're priced to get a 10% return. That ignores growth and all sorts of other shit, but if the price to earnings ratio means you're going to get about 10% of your price on earnings, right? So it's kind of a 10% revenue stream if you want to keep it real simple. If it was a bond, it would be trivial, right? If it was the bond had a PE ratio of 10, you could bank on how much you're going to get delivered to your bank account. And so if you want to, you know, increase the valuations by a factor of 3, then you got to plan on decreasing the expected returns by a factor of 3. And so if the valuation is now, let's say Case-Shiller is normally around 12, which is a better metric than just PE. The Case-Shiller PE is historical fair values around 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. And it depends on if you include the last 30 years is the problem. So the valuations have gone up so much in the last 30 years that now what people think are historical averages are not historical averages. That's what drives me completely. So what I do is, to me, set valuations, I will take any metric and go back as far as I can in history and up to about 1995. Say that's historic. And then in 1995, actually the number I come up with is 1994, to be precise, the valuations took off. They all took off. Every metric took off. And you can see things like corporate debt take off. And you can see all sorts of things that correlate with that. Michael Green says that's when passive investing sort of took off. But it sure as hell was a tailwind. Interesting, and I haven't yet figured out why this could correlate, but it was 1994 when China pegged the yuan to the dollar. And I'm thinking, why would that cause the valuations to take off? But China grew at an extraordinary rate. So they basically exported deflationary pressures to us. But during that time period, valuations have gone up by a factor of factor of 3, 200%. People have trouble with that math. But and then the question is, of what happens if over the next 40 years they compound negative 3% to get back to normal? By the way, in 1994, they were at the top of the valuation channel. That's why I picked 94. That's when they left the channel. So they were 50% overvalued in 94.
What do you think it's going to take to get to that reversion to the mean? Because it seems like everybody is pot committed to number go up. Like, stocks need to go up. Real estate needs to go up. Like, there is no willpower to try to correct things and get back to proper valuations.
Well, there's the very fact that they have to go up probably is what's setting us up for them to not go up. Right? There's a famous Silas Marner quote that says oftentimes it's cited something has not happened as the reason it won't happen when it means it's imminent. Paraphrased. And it's like the earthquake. We haven't had a bad earthquake in California in 100 years. Why are you worried about earthquakes? They go, because we haven't had a serious earthquake in 100 fucking years. Right? That's the reason I'm worried about earthquakes. And so when the market gets so hyper-financialized and hyper-priced, all it's going to take is some guy sneezing while, you know, and the whole thing's going to come down. It's not come down in a crash. It's going to start coming down. And at some point, they will no longer be able to V-bounce it back up. The last 40 years of valuation climbing is a series of V bounces where it keeps recovering, keeps recovering, keeps recovering. And you have corrected nothing. They're talking about the crash earlier, you know, a couple months ago, a month ago, whatever. I'm going, 10% is a crash. You'll see, I saw articles, you know, 3 months ago that said, you know, so-and-so, it's such and such a mega bank says that the markets could go down 10% between now and the end of the year. And I go, they could go down between now and lunch. Right? What kind of crazy prediction is that? That, you know what that means? Whoever said that is a 20-something sitting in a cubicle and he or she has never, ever witnessed a bone-crushing bear market, a soul-ripping bear market. We are due for a soul-ripping bear market because all the guys who know what they look like, they ain't working anymore. They're done.
Retired, shoveled all their savings into Bitcoin and gold.
yeah. Could be. I'm hoping. And so again, I did wake up grumpy when I read that article and I'm getting sold this 1.5% inflation rate.
Quick break here, freaks. This rip is brought to you by Gradually Then Suddenly, a framework for understanding Bitcoin as money by Parker Lewis. I wrote the foreword to the book. I'm honored to have done so because it's the best 0-to-1 primer if you're looking for a logical explanation of why Bitcoin obsoletes all other money. Buy one for yourself and maybe a few for your friends. Go to thesafehouse.com/gradually. That's thesafehouse.com, safe spelled S-A-I-F, thesafehouse.com/gradually. Use the promo code TFTC for $5 off at checkout. Buy it now, freaks. The price of Bitcoin is going up. You need to understand it. This is the best 0-to-1 primer. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that currency runs on are a risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores. Connect your wallets or custodial accounts and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile. Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with Zaprite. Go to Zaprite.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. Zaprite.com/TFTC, $40 off.
The other thing that's really infuriating about... Let's be generous and appease these people with the idea that inflation is actually 1.5%. The conversation around is completely disingenuous because it's still
1.5%.
It's still 1.5% growing at a pace. Like, you didn't bring prices down at all, and they're trying to.
And by the way, no one gave the Fed the authorization to aim for a positive inflation rate. Nobody gave them that authorization. They just took it.
No, we've talked about this before, but it bears repeating. Like, it is textbook doublespeak. Like, we're going to create price stability right by targeting 2% rate of inflation.
Instability. Yeah. Yes, yeah. That's right. It's I'm trying to think of an analogy. There are things where you can, by creating, if you go to draw a line underneath a sentence, if you actually put a little wiggle in the line, it's easier than if you try to draw the straight line, because then you get the wobble that goes out of control. So sometimes, I don't know, that's a dumb metaphor. So the bottom line is that we've been lied to about our returns. We've gotten good returns recently, but at the cost of being sent up to a sort of a Red Bull level swan dive moment in our future. We have pulled appreciation forward. Now we've pulled 40 years of appreciation forward easily. I think my prediction is 40 years from now, with normal economic growth, no serious catastrophes, we will, and it's the assumption we regress to fair value, we will not move a dollar. It'll take us 40 years to get to fair value, assuming we don't have any catastrophes. the kind that really move markets, not just catastrophes happen all the time. Right? They're normally not relevant.
And that's what worries me with this economic backdrop, is that they'll try to incite a catastrophe, if you will. Recent weeks, bringing back the Iran bombing Israel rhetoric, which has been around for decades now at this point, obviously. Got things popping off in Russia still, Israel. And then the rhetoric here in the U.S. alone, like leading up to this election, it's
well, extremely divisive. Our foreign policy wonks seem to not respect the dangers of war. They just, I think in the olden days, during the Cold War, we had Cold Warriors who understood what war was about. And now we've got people who think that every war is going to be one where we have 1,000 casualties and they have 5 million. They think that's what war is going to be every time.
No, we're so and, far. I mean, what was the story out of the Cold War era? Like there was, I forget if it was on the U.S. side or the Russian side, but you had somebody in a nuclear submarine with their hand over the button and they decided not to hit it.
Yeah, some guy was told to hit it and refuse. I know the story. I don't know the details.
Yeah, it seems like we're a far cry away from that. Like there, it seems like if somebody was told to hit the button today, they'd do it pretty eagerly. Button.
Yeah. And the other thing is there's other ways to do it, right? So you know, we could have our grid taken down to rubble. I'm confident by China, Russia, Israel, and who knows how many other countries. And I only mention Israel not because they'd bring us to rubble, but because the Israeli tech industry owns our grid. Yeah. Right? So they actually probably have a better grip on our grid than anybody. But fortunately, I do believe they want to be allies. Yeah. But China, you know. I've got a friend who runs a prepper community, used to be a bear market fund manager, David Tice. He's been calling me recently. And he runs a prepper community, you know, with the Navy SEALs and the MREs, and the, you know, solar panels and you name it, right? The real sort of get out of Dodge prepper community. And he's moving out of the country.
Lovely.
Right, which means he doesn't trust his own prepper community to protect his ass. That's what that means.
Yeah, and if he can't trust, if he's prepping, can't trust it, it's not a good sign. Where's he going? No,
he's not sure yet. He called me from Argentina, said this is a shit show down here. I think he was going to Asia to look at places like New Zealand, you know, with Bucktooth Ardhern out of power, maybe the crackhead Bucktooth Ardhern out of power. Oh, I talked to a Canadian intelligence guy the other day, and he said that Chrystia Freeland does have some serious drugs in her system.
Wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, if you watch her, you know, when I do podcasts, I wiggle. I can't help it. You're sitting there still, and it's like it almost looks like your screen is frozen and mine is not. I'm not a crackhead, for the record, but I play one on the internet. And you watch Freeland, you watch Ardhern, they actually look like junkies. They look like Hitler Jonesing in the 1930s, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that, and Zelensky, right?
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of drug addicts out there with their hands on serious weaponry.
Yeah, do you have any hope that the tides can turn? Like, do you have hope in this election season? Seems like culturally.
Oh no, not the election season. No.
No.
I wouldn't want to bet on Trump at this point.
Why not?
I would have. Well, because I'm watching what they're doing with Kamala. I went down to our cafe in the building, and there's a black chick there I occasionally talk to, and I said, okay, you're my window in the black community, are they going to vote for Kamala? And she said, no chance. She said, I can't do it. I just can't do it. And I've talked to a lot of people on this topic. And so I believe that Kamala can't legitimately get anywhere near the vote she would need to win. But I'm watching the media build this superstructure of belief that looks completely fraudulent to me.
Oh, it is completely fraudulent.
Well, but I think they're teeing us up for her winning and us supposedly believing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's more actually reminiscent of the 2016 election compared to 2020 in terms of like the polling leading up, the prediction markets. They're really...
Well, you can run the prediction markets too. By the way, how many different kind of bets can you make in a prediction market? So what is it that sets up a bet in the prediction market? Can you set up a new bet in the prediction market? How do you set up a bet in the prediction market? Who sets it up?
I think you can... I'm not sure how Polymarket does it. I don't know if it's user-generated bets or they're making the book.
Well, let's just put it this way. It's like... crypto. I'm going to take you back to crypto, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to find in the prediction markets the equivalent of Bitcoin or maybe Ethereum. And what we're seeing in the prediction markets are potentially one of the 29,000 shitcoins, which you make, you create, and then you run them. And all of a sudden, there's the prediction market that says, oh, by the way, Kamala's winning because some guy dumped $1,000 into that prediction market. That's trivial to do.
Yeah. I think the one most people are citing Polymarket. I think the last I checked, there's like a 70 mil in the contract for that particular prediction.
Peanuts.
Yeah.
By the way, if you know you're going to rig the election, then it's also a good bet.
Right.
Right.
That's true.
So they're going to make money, but they need it to look like it was legit. So we're seeing like Time Magazine's picture of, did you see the Time Magazine cover with Kamala?
Yeah. It's
just Kamala is the most offensive motherfucker I've ever seen in politics. I'll take Maxine Waters over her. But she's now being sold as like this incredibly stately creature who doesn't cackle, who doesn't speak like Dr. Seuss wrote her fucking speech for her.
Who isn't the daughter of an overt Marxist professor.
Who herself is an overt Marxist, who doesn't have an overt Marxist running mate. And as Turley said today, I think some of the shit being dumped on Waltz is not correct. And I said that in a podcast the other day. I said, I you want to get the story straight because I don't think everything they're dumping on him is right. But there is some shit he did that was bad. And I mean, as it
comes to leaders too, like just personality trait wise, like you mentioned the cackling, like Tim Walz is just yelling at people the whole time.
Yeah.
They don't seem like competent, patient, level-headed rulers.
And besides Trump, which he certainly set a different bar for what a leader can look like. And so I'm Trump adjacent where I have gotten past his idiosyncratic personality and just listened to his message and he seems okay to me. But before that, even Hillary, right? She could fake being a solid leader. Obama was fine. Clinton was fine. Bush, I didn't trust. Bush Jr. He wasn't fine to me. I mean, I voted for him once, not twice, because he killed a lot of people and got us in a horrid war. But his father was fine. Reagan was fine. Carter was fine. Not Harris. I don't think she has the personal fortitude to stand up to anybody.
No. Do you think the Democratic Party wanted this situation, or do you think this is just pure panic?
Well, the signs came out quickly, didn't they? They printed them fast.
Yeah.
We're not even sure whether Biden got told that his his campaign was being disassembled when it got disassembled. So the Twitter feed disappeared and various things got dismembered. And it's not clear to me that anyone in the Biden administration signed off on any of that. And then they said, look, we've now torn your campaign down to the studs. Now you have to sign off. That's my guess is what happened.
Well, and he basically admitted that in his latest interview earlier this week, didn't he?
I don't know. Listening to Biden talk now doesn't make sense to me.
No.
I'd much rather read about how the Secret Service had nothing to do with trying to kill Trump. Have you seen a talking head question that narrative, by the way? None. Fox News should be jumping on this a little bit. Maybe not the talkers during the day where it's really just blah, 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 filling space. But the big gun should be saying, look, we gotta be interviewing some of these Secret Service agents and saying who pulled you away from your position? Who did that? Right? Because if you had to bet your net worth on was that a lone gunman or a complex hit, you'd have to go with the hit.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And it's not even being discussed.
I mean, Chris Martinson's analysis of the audio files, like it's...
John Cullen. There's so many.
It seems obvious there was more than one shooter, and I don't think that incel 20-year-old acted alone, if we know.
The only thing you can't explain is why they missed. That's the hardest thing to explain.
I mean, you've got a lot of people calling it divine intervention, and that's like Russian Kamala and failed assassination attempt. It seems like we're in a chaotic vacuum, power vacuum right now. Which many people have been talking about.
The press should be talking about this, and all you hear is them talking about who should be fired. I go, let me see if I got this right. They murdered one guy, they hurt other people, and they tried to assassinate a former and potentially future president. And you guys are debating who should be fired? What kind of crazy shit is that? And the answer is, this is just limited hangout crap.
Yeah, and it's all been swept up. It's already been memory hold.
Absolutely.
They're not talking about it at all.
There's not going to be a Warren Commission report on this one. And Cheadle got up there and started lying right away. My guess is Cheadle got told what to say. I think they said, look, you're going to go up there and you're going to tank the interview. And then we're going to fire you. And there's money in the Caymans. Shut the fuck up. Lois Lerner's doing okay, too. Don't worry about it. But it's Banana Republic.
It really is. And it seems, I mean, what are your thoughts on the elite theory that people have been talking about? Is going back to that power vacuum that seems to have manifested over the last couple months. You have Elon, Peter Thiel, the PayPal mafia, tech elite, small tech elite, if you will, sort of throwing
David Sachs, weight. Guys like that.
Yeah. It seems like, and it's being positioned as, people have actually built stuff, the productive class, who have built things and actually know how to get stuff done, are looking at the U.S., the competency crisis, the deep state controlling everything and saying, all right, this is our chance to course correct here.
But they are part of the deep state, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think Musk, because he's, you know, Asperger boy, did you read his biography, by the way?
I've not yet.
It's actually pretty entertaining. It's probably a little, you know, oversold, but they sure make it look like a whack job. So, but you know, if I had read this biography 20, 30 years ago, it might have changed the way I did chemistry, for example. I mean, it might have changed the way I went about problem solving and stuff like that. Because he has this don't take no for an answer approach, which is kind of Jobs-like. But he also had this incredible ability to clear problems out of his way that stopped most people. And, you know, he'd say, how much does this cost? And they'd say, it's 1.5 million. He goes, that's insane. And he'd go down to Walmart and buy a couple of refrigeration units and rip out the guts of it and put it in and say, that'll do it. You know, that sort of thing. So he stopped buying all his parts for SpaceX from the military contractors because he said they're all profoundly overpriced. Made no sense. So he figured out how to make a rocket on the cheap. It's a very impressive story, actually. And he wanted a scooter when he was a kid. And he asked his dad, and his dad said no. And he just stands there staring at him, just spooking the shit out of him, right? It's like, is this kid going to, like, stab me in my sleep or something? What's going on here? And then the next day he'd do it again. And finally his dad said, fuck it, here's your fucking scooter. And then he went to some hacker conference or something as a kid. And his dad didn't want it. So Elon went and raised the money independently of his dad. He goes to the conference and he walks. His dad goes to pick him up at the end of the conference. And there he's standing there with a bunch of big swinging dick coat heads. And he walks up and he's just banging away with these guys like there's no tomorrow. And one of the guys turns to his dad and said, you got to buy him a better computer. Right? And so he just doesn't take no for an answer, which now it's possible, therefore, that his apparent embracing of anti-deep state free speech, it may be a ruse, but it may be his Asperger's. I mean, it may be it's just him being uncontrollable.
Yeah, that's the – I mean, I've had a lot of conversations about this on both sides of the argument.
One By the way, everyone talks about my fucking mugs. This is only 20 ounces. You know why I have this mug?
It looks like a pot.
I've never tipped it over. Tipping over a 20-ounce coffee on your desktop causes trouble. I've never tipped it over. It's is it because got a low center of gravity.
Yeah, it's the structural integrity. It's not the
I can't even tell. It's a huge. I got the first one I ever got. It was just like this. Came from a convenience store. It had some logo on it and shit. And I go, I got to get a couple more of those. I went on Amazon and found them. Yeah. They don't tip over.
I
don't worry about me. You just humor me. That'll tip over. That motherfucker will tip over.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially
you've done it a few times.
Yeah, the kids mainly.
Mine doesn't. I have the dog problem. They'll run right across the coffee table and knock shit over. Wiped out a computer on me. Completely wiped out a computer.
Yeah. Back to like Elon and I'm still trying to form like exactly what I think is going on because it is utterly confusing, chaotic. And
oh, there's a great metaphor. There's a great metaphor for it. And I heard it. Oh, it was from Kamala's that parody, phone call to Waltz, where she says, you know, when your GPS device starts randomly rerouting you repeatedly. And I'm going, oh, that's brilliant. Because when that happens and you're sitting there going and it keeps just changing the route and shit, and you're all confused. I go, they're rerouting our route now. It's like this random, you think you understand something, and then within 24 hours, your mind is just fried again by something.
Yeah.
And you can never get on your feet. You can never get sort of a firm foundation on what's going on.
No, I mean, the last few weeks, after the assassination attempt, I was like, there's no way this guy loses. And then you see the media and the rhetorical campaign behind Kamala, you see the polls, you're like, oh shit. And you talk to some people and they're like, yeah, I'll vote for Kamala, even though they never liked her before in their lives or understand anything.
Even though she got the same number of electoral votes as I got.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then, so it's like bearish. And then you have like Trump's back on Twitter this week. He does a space with Elon last night and the emotions are shifting the other way.
And the hack job that took place. Right. The
DDoS.
I can't remember what you call it, but yeah, where they basically bury the servers with shit.
Distributed and, denial of service attack.
Yes, 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 yes. And, yeah. But you know, it's not like Elon's not going to have that fixed in about, I don't know. How long did it take to fix that?
I think less than an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he that's there's no way he was going to let that stop it.
No. That's the other. Now you have like nations. You have the, or not even a nation state, like an unelected governance body in the European Union, like sending a letter, like don't do this interview because it could cause strife over here. And yeah, you look what's going on in the UK, France, other areas. Like it seems like people are pissed off. The Borg, the deep state, knows it, and they've turned the propaganda up to 1,000. And that's like, on some people, it's obviously effective, particularly older people, I think. But I think many people are beginning to see through it. Like, this is complete and utter bullshit.
Or you're at the wrong layer of the onion, and we think we can see through it. And we're being handed a... There's these guys. I was on a Zoom call with a bunch of guys, they hold it twice a week, and they had this guy who's one of these. The guy shows a video of how you can influence the audience, and he shows a bunch of shit. And he talked to him, and he says here you can draw this figure on this whiteboard, and he says, oh, you could draw this or you could draw this. He does this, some examples, and then he says each of you audience members, you have a Sharpie and a whiteboard under your chair. This is a well-known TV show. This is not some off Broadway thing. I recognize the hosts, et cetera, et cetera. And he says, no, I want you to draw something simple. I just drew a bunch of things that are simple. Draw something simple. And he says, don't show anyone what you're drawing. And then he draws something, he holds up his card. It's a star. It's just a star. And then he says to the audience, hold up your drawings. It's like 95% stars. And it turns out he fed them the subliminal thought to get them to draw the stars. And it was unbelievable. And you go, oh, my Lord. And that's what the internet's doing to us. It is feeding us. And you think you can defend against it. You think you're smart. And you don't realize it's really subtle shit. It's just slight changes in wording and stuff in headlines. You're getting headlines that are different than my headlines. It's all being shaped.
Yeah, they're A/B tested, or you're fed a certain headline depending on your social credit score and your background score
right
on the internet.
Right. And it's. And you think you can see the scams, but the scams are at a much different level.
But it's like, who's running the scams, right? Like, who is, because that's what I think a lot of people who are questioning things like I am right now. Is like, who's running the scam? And is this person or this group of people that are saying that they're going to come in and tell the scammers to scram? Or are they scamming? They're all doing it together. It's like...
Well, ultimately, it's got to go to the top of the food chain. The top of the food chain has to be the money, right? It's got to be the money. Now, a lot of things that happen, like Pfizer vaccine stuff, they say, oh, it's for the money. I go, no, not necessarily at that level. I'm talking about, you know, the corporate power structure sort of money. But I don't think it's... You know, Pfizer trying to make another 100 million or something like that. I don't think it's that. It's the moneyed interests who are controlling the population. For example, I look at Facebook. Where's Facebook's revenue come from? I don't think it comes from ads. I don't think it comes from the crap they say they come from. What I will tell you is, if the Pentagon's missing $14 trillion, I bet you some of that went to Facebook.
To social engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think? Yeah. What do you think happens? You think they rig the election and Kamala gets in?
Yeah. Probably.
What does that mean for us? Are we going to be malcontents that need to flee the country?
Well, because we won't be able to stand watching Kamala be president. So we will suffer. HDS, Harris, you know, what's that? Derangement syndrome. Yeah. I'm getting old. I'm starting to lose my ability to recall shit. If I'm demented in a couple of years, some would say, Dave, that ship has sailed. But if I'm demented to the point by traditional metrics, I will have recognized it because it's just names don't come back to me, things like that. So it could be just loss of neuroplasticity, which happens in old age. You know why old guys drive down the road with their blinkers on? It just clicked recently. They can't hear the blinker. They're deaf. No, they can't hear the clicking. So I have hearing aids, which I never wear. But one day when I got them, it was surreal. I was in the DMV and I was hearing all these conversations. I go, I'm not supposed to be hearing all these conversations. And I could hear the keyboards clicking, and I went outside and I could hear the raindrops landing. And I think it was actually hyper-corrected in the sense that I think I have the sense that my hearing might have been above norm with these hearing aids. And by the end of the day, I was exhausted. I mean, really, really wrung out exhausted because my brain had been so bombarded with what I was hearing. And I don't even know where I went with that, except for the fact that
we were talking about Harris derangement syndrome is going to set in for us.
Yeah. She will be truly repulsive, and which makes me more sympathetic to the people who hate Trump. Because if you hate Trump, if you hate his policies, if you're not tolerant of what he's trying to achieve, then he would be really repulsive to you, right? The fact that I can stand what he stands for makes me be able to ignore the Trumpiness of him. But if I hated what he stood for, then I think he would drive me batshit. And so we're going to suffer Harris derangement syndrome if you happen to not like her. She does talk like Dr. Seuss. I think she's got the IQ of a walnut. I mean, I think she's really stupid.
I think she's made that abundantly clear through all of her media engagements over the years. Like, going back to Trump derangement syndrome, that, like, do people actually, like, that's the other thing, like the media, which makes me think that maybe there is hope that if he were to get in office, things could change. Because, like, the media is essentially rewiring people's brains to believe he has particular stances of particular issues that simply aren't true. Like,
but they've been doing that since day one. You know, the Charlottesville, Nazi story and I sniffed out and wrote about before it became known that the whole Russia collusion steel dossier was bullshit. I figured that out independently, and I was piecing, I can't imagine how much effort I put into it, only at the very end just find out it was all fake. And I go, I knew it. But I did piece it together before Mueller report told us. Now, you can also read the Mueller report, and you can find it's like the Bible or something. You can find anything you want in there, and I remember when they used to testify against Trump in the hearings, and in the morning, it would be people just landing punches on Trump. And in the afternoon, it would be those same people saying, I don't know anything. And I realized that what that did is it handed CNN their talking points. It handed Fox their talking points. So CNN got the morning and Fox got the afternoon. And so we don't have a media. Our only hope now is, Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi and guys like that, Walter Kern. And people, bloggers, guys with Substacks. That's our hope. And the problem is the average person doesn't have that. The average person doesn't have time to have that. They need to be able to just turn on the tube and watch it for a few minutes and figure out what happened that day.
I had an interesting anecdote because I completely agree in trying to figure out how to normalize this activity. I have a good friend whose parents were completely like MSNBC brainwashed, and he went back home like a year or two ago, and like was sitting with them. They're watching MSNBC, and he's like, "Do you guys actually believe this stuff?" So they're like, "Yeah, it's the news." And he slowly but surely, he like took his mom's phone, downloaded Twitter, and then like followed like five people for her, and like just gave her the phone. And he's like, "If you're gonna watch MSNBC, make sure you read the tweets from these people as well to get another position." Then he went back like 6 months later, followed a few more people, and like within 2 years, like she was like, "Holy shit, MSNBC is brainwashing me."
Right. Well, so my wife is starting to see it, so now she's asking me to buy a couple more guns and things like that. Yeah, I've been chasing this pedophile story, and one of the hallmarks of the Freemason pedophile story is it is black and white checkerboard flooring, turns out. Yep. The pedophile guys, and I don't even know if it's real, but it's all over the internet. And she now notices the black and white checkerboard floors in the movies and stuff. And they're ugly floors. So you go, why would they use such an ugly floor for that scene? And then one of the I think synchronized swimming teams had an eye on their shoulder. It was the all-knowing eye. And I'm going, holy moly, that's a little weird. The satanic theme of the closing ceremony was disturbing. More disturbing than the opening, in my opinion.
Very much more. Very much so more disturbing. Like the gray. I fell down a Twitter thread about it last night. It was like overtly satanic worshiping. Like you cut off the head of
right.
Nike.
And they had guys who were tumbling, for example. As you know, I used to be a gymnast, and the guys who were tumbling weren't even any good. They looked like they had trained some football players to do some poor tumbling passes, and they were awkward, and the whole thing. And there was that satanic creature, whatever that was supposed to represent. Now, by far the worst ceremony was neither of the two in this Olympics. The worst was the London opening ceremony in 2012. Have you ever seen that? It's a satanic theme.
Is that the one with the they had the hospital beds and stuff too?
Like yeah, sort of yeah, yeah.
Predictive programming.
It's super, super creepy. Where the kids are in their pajamas in the beds looking horrified, and these demons are running around the infield, you know, tormenting the kids, and there's this big demon in the middle, and satanic symbolism around the perimeter. It is beyond creepy. And what I don't understand, like the guy who took the fall for the opening ceremony, right? And you know, they say, well, you know, he had artistic license, this and that. No, someone cleared that sucker. It wasn't just some guy who did it. They say, oh, I wonder what he's going to do tonight, right? They cleared it. And it seems to me, though, ceremonies should be really pretty universally acceptable, right? They really should be glorious, very artistic. You know, if China did it, it would be just phenomenal choreography and stuff. And it would just be so impressive that they could get, you know, 1,000 Chinese chicks who you'd pay $50 to carry their groceries for them, you know, hot, doing something in perfect synchrony, right? And instead we're getting these bullshit themes. And I don't know why. Just but no complete. One should sign off on those.
No. Speaking of the pedo rabbit hole you've been falling down, like, you know, did you end up, you never released the second part, did you? No.
It was a third part, but I'm working on it. It turns out it's been simmering in the crock pot. I did a podcast with Nick Bryant the other day, which was interesting because he's the guy who busted open the Franklin scandal story in a book. Now, the Franklin scandal story was busted up by someone else, but no one knew about it. He wrote the book, and he's a very detailed guy. And so I did a podcast where I essentially interviewed him. We did a three-hour podcast. For an hour and a half, we talked about finance and geopolitics and stuff. And he says, well, you have questions for me. Let's flip this now. And so the part two, it turns out, I asked him questions about this stuff. And he's a detailed guy to the point where if he doesn't know the answer, he doesn't want to speculate. And the problem is what they kept doing is funneling the discussion back to things like Franklin and stuff like that. And I knew about that because he'd written about it. And I wanted to take him into places like Pizzagate and stuff like that. And he said, well, you know, the emails are very strange, but I can't find the smoking gun, and I'm good at that, and I'm bothered I can't find the smoking gun. And I'm going, well, those emails look like the smoking gun to me, but there's more smoking guns, right? For example, if you could get a hold of Anthony Weiner's laptop, Pizzagate would either blow up completely into a scandal of unimaginable proportions, or that whole story would be devastatedly shown to be just a ruse. It would be one of the two. Sidney Powell, Trump's lawyer, said that if you could get Weiner's laptop, a lot of people would go to prison. A lot of people. And she was talking about, I think, the perversions on Weiner's laptop. So I've been chasing it, but the problem is it's very hard to distinguish fact from fiction, too. I'm scheduled to have a chat with a guy who, if you saw his videos online, you'd go, there's no chance I would listen to this guy, but I have. And even he wears a latex mask. He muffles his voice over, so he sounds like this crazy guy like this. But he says shit, and I go, he knows a lot. And then the other day I noticed in his Twitter feed, he's now been talking about his role in various psyops and stuff. And I go, so he started out saying, I'm a victim. Now he's talking about his role in some sort of psyop world. You can be both, by the way, right? So when they get these kids and they groom them, some percentage of them end up being organ donors. Some percentage end up just crackheads in the sex trade and stuff like that after they're done abusing them as kids. Some percentage end up getting sort of promoted into the network as functional members of the network. And so that could be him. And he has agreed to talk. And he said, we can have a chat without all the Hollywood crap that I do on my videos. I'm hoping to talk to this guy, find out that he's completely rational. And I've got his phone number and stuff. We just haven't had the talk, in part because I don't want to blow it and have a shitty talk and then find out I should ask some 20 other questions I hadn't thought of. So I'm kind of holding back. But I've been slowly, you know, I asked a DOD intelligence officer one day. I was on a Zoom call with him, and this guy was unquestionably legit at some level, right? You never know when you're being lied to. Mm-hmm. I think it was last night I was on the phone with a Canadian intelligence guy, right? And I'm positive this guy's legit. But this DOD intelligence guy, and I was fact-checking him all through the Zoom call, and he is everywhere. I mean, this guy is omnipresent out there, and he'd talk about Rumsfeld. I'd Google him and Rumsfeld, and there they'd be together. And I asked him about the trafficking, and he starts talking about Epstein. I said, no, Epstein may be a big part of the problem, but I'm interested in the weirder, darker stuff, the things that is not being talked about in polite company. I said, let me ask you a simple question. Is the Clinton Foundation trafficking children? And he said, absolutely. Now, I gave a talk to this Dr. Zoom group, sort of going over what I had learned in this very unprofessional, very sort of stream of consciousness kind of presentation. And after 2 hours, a CIA guy showed up. And I was told he was coming. I go, wait a minute, he's coming? And the guy runs it, says, yeah, I've known him for 25 years. I called him, asked him if he could get over here. So he shows up. He's an old guy now. He shows up. He hadn't been listening to my podcast. They said, tell us about trafficking. And he did this like 10, 15 minute synopsis. And it was like an answer key for me. I nailed it. It was almost as though he had listened to my whole podcast. And then they started asking us questions, and they'd say, Dave, what do you think of this? And I'd answer. And then they'd go to him, and he'd go, that's pretty much right. And now, he said the problem is that you won't root it out of the system very easily, because he said for some reason 18 to 20%, which is a pretty precise range, of the CIA is involved in trafficking. That's a big number.
Yeah. And it's a big number. The fact that he felt comfortable being an ex-CIA agent.
Well, so the thing about ex-CIA, I'm not positive if he either worked with the CIA or was in the CIA, and I couldn't. He's actually an author out there. He's got a book out there, and if I read his book, I'd probably. But his book has some age on it, so I wasn't sure I cared. But and I wasn't convinced his information he had now was fresh. I got this feeling maybe he'd been retired for too long or something. There was something about him that told me that he'd been sort of on mothballs quite a while. But you got guys like Carlo Vigano in the Vatican, number three in the Vatican, calling out the world leaders for trafficking and stuff like that. So the world's a fucked up place. That's a pretty safe statement. Vigano, I think it was Vigano, but it might have been the undersecretary of the UN of the United Nations. One of them said that pedophilia is the currency of geopolitics. That's exactly what my angle has been. There's this idea. I don't care that there's pervs out there. I care, but it doesn't get me anywhere. So when someone sends me some article or something where there's a guy who's a perv, it doesn't mean anything to me. It is the networking of the pervs and their influence outside this network or in this network. So the Epstein story is obviously a network. But there's others. That's the problem. There's others. So it's the influence of that crap on decisions being made by important people that don't make sense. Like, why would Biden open the borders? Right? What's that all about? Makes no sense. And you say, oh, it's to get voters. It makes no sense. Just make them up. Invent them. Dead guys. You don't need that. Why would you let foreign agents by the thousands, which there's no question they came in. There's no question. I don't need to have stats. Here's the stats. If we're letting 4 million people come across the border randomly, enemies of the United States are going to be shoving their guys across that border. And if they're not, they're so fucking stupid, we don't have to worry about them. But they're not that stupid. So you can bet that there is a ton of undocumented Chinese. These are not, we've got tons of, you know, Chinese born people in the country. These are guys who are not on a radar. We've got guys from all the major hotspots in the world who came across that border. And these are sleeper cells. And at some point, right now, what I think we're seeing is stories about, you know, some illegal immigrant raping a bunch of girls. I think that is, those are the guys who are sort of around the fringe causing trouble because they're problems, right? These are not good people. But if I were exporting people to the United States on purpose, right? If I were China, if I were Iran, if I were, you name it, I'd tell these guys, behave yourself because the border's still open. We're still getting people across. And it, the shit might start hitting the fan if we actually close the borders, because then they'll say, okay, now it's time to strike.
Yeah. I mean, it seems pretty obvious that there's something very off with the border situation. And I mean, there's been,
it makes no sense that someone would open them up. I don't care how much they pay them. It just makes no sense. It's so treasonous.
So do you think the current administration has been corrupted by this network that you've been diving into?
I think they all have been corrupted. Now, I don't think everyone's a pedophile, but I think there's enough. Let's say 100 congressmen. I'm going to guess it's mostly congressmen. I think the women tend not to be pedophiles. Not necessarily true, but probably. Let's say 100 are compromised. Those 100 are going to be leaning on their friends to achieve what they've been told to achieve.
Yeah. No, right? I mean, it seems like it's pervasive too, because obviously, I'm sure you're aware of the Sean P. Diddy Combs debacle.
That went away pretty fast, didn't it?
Went away fast, but pattern recognition, videotapes throughout the house, blackmail.
Yeah.
Drugging influential people at parties.
So one of the things you find when you start digging into this shit is that Hollywood is corrupted from head to toe.
That, and yeah, it's very obvious.
But it's not just casting couch crap. This is not just pervs who want to bang some 17-year-old. This is seriously corrupted. And you end up finding out that Nickelodeon, that all those kids were getting abused on Nickelodeon. You end up finding out that, you know, there's pedophiles who work for Nickelodeon who then get hired by Disney. Disney has got darkness in its closets. The corporation has darkness in its closets. And it actually started, you know, I remember thinking about the fact that Walt Disney was able to buy up all this fucking land in Florida. And once you're trying to buy up land, people know it. You're not going to be able to buy it, right? I mean, you really got to do it on the side. And you find out that Walt had shell companies that were funded and run by the CIA to help him buy up the land. And who knows how many people got whacked. And I knew there had to have been some serious dealings for Walt to get Disney World set up. But Walt turns out to be a Freemason. And I never know what to do with the Freemasons. But Walt supposedly was a complete perv himself. And so maybe that, you know, Disney from the get-go was founded upon compromise people. And I do believe that, you know, there are whole divisions, I think, within the CIA who were funded to help Hollywood make movies that they want to have made. Now, the image is, okay, Top Gun and, you know, things like that. But I think it's way darker than that. And by the way, you can see China's influence in movies too. China mm-hmm. has the same sort of thing in U.S.-based movies. And so you will see movies where China is treated very favorably, and there's no question that China influenced that plot. But I also think that Hollywood's one of their charges is to fictionalize reality, I call it. Take all the things that we think might be true, and there will be a movie about that topic. Eyes Wide Shut. You know, Born Identity, you can go through a whole list of them. And I think it's so that we anchor our thinking on fiction. So that you find out you think MK Ultra, and you go, oh yeah, that's just Matt Damon, Born Identity. It's like, no. It's Jolly West working out of Harvard, doing weird shit with students and turning their brains into jello. It's not just Born Identity, right?
Yeah, it's like a combination of predictive programming, like Limited Hangout, and like mm-hmm. if you believe in like the Satanist, like Luciferian tilt to it, like they have to be overt with their messaging and sort of rub it in your face.
One of the things, again, this Dr. Zoom group, we had a guy who's kind of an expert on messaging, and he said, look, you can't just go through the front door. You can't take some virgin pair of ears and brain and start talking about Baphomet and Moloch and these guys. It'll just shut them down immediately. And so you kind of have to wade them into the shallow end of the pool. And what has looks very unproductive to me is to go back deep into the Freemasons, go back into Satanism, but you can focus a little bit on Satanism in the present where it is visible in the present. So Marina Abramović, you know, there's a great example where, you know, here's this overt Satanist who has dinner parties, feeding people cadavers, being written up in the Atlantic Monthly, right? And you're sitting there going, oh, you know, and you see these pictures of her at her dinner parties. There's literally these cadaver meals. Mm-hmm. And you can't help but wonder, okay, it's said to be food made look like cadavers. First of all, who would eat that shit, right? Who in their right mind would go to that dinner party? Who would be caught dead in there? And the answer is Hollywood.
And some people in D.C. has the emails.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So then you're thinking, okay, so she's an overt Satanist. She's got the goat skin, goat's head pictures. I mean, there's pictures of her with the Clintons, right? You know, there's just, and you go, okay, I'm too deep on this. This is crazy. And then you find out above the fold ABC News that Zelensky appoints her in charge of all the schools in Ukraine. You know, he just put a Satanist in charge of all the schools. Someone explain that to me.
Yeah.
And you find out that, you know, the woman who was twice jailed in Haiti for child trafficking, who twice got bailed out by the Clinton Foundation, now works for Amber Alert. You want to find pedos? You just look at any major organization that's in charge of supposedly combating it. That's where you'll find the pedos. None of those organizations are legit, probably. That's my hunch. There's certainly, if you look at their board of directors and stuff, you go, oh boy, that doesn't look right. And some Hollywood elites, you know, that's, I track some of things that they've put on Twitter off to Russian trafficking sites and stuff. You can make those connections.
Yeah.
And then the question is this ruling the world? Is this running the world? Vigano, you know, Archbishop Vigano says yes. And now they've excommunicated him, supposedly.
They did. Like last month, I believe.
I know.
Talking to an outsider.
Got a little awkward there.
Yeah, that scandal with Instagram where they were overtly enabling people to use coded messages to facilitate trafficking. Who knows if that Wayfair thing from a few years ago
that was so odd. And by the way, the CEO of Wayfair was in charge of various child organizations. He was prominent in the, you know, orphans for whatever, you know, it fit the pattern. Fit the pattern.
Yeah. This $50,000 bureau. What?
With a kid's name on it.
Yeah.
But then again, are we getting faked out? Is this the superficial? I'll let them argue about this for a while, right? While they're arguing about who should be fired for Trump's attempted assassination, they can argue about Wayfair. You know, maybe that's just not the story at all. But if you read the Franklin scandal, that's a case where I think they lost control. And in the Franklin scandal, the story is not about just the trafficking network. That really is not the interesting part of the story. The interesting part is what the authorities did when they had to try to wrap it up. So the FBI comes in and crushes them. And when the FBI crushes the people trying to uncover a child trafficking scandal, you know there's filth right to the very core of the system. So I had dinner once with a former head of the CIA. He was the biggest douchebag I've ever met, I think. John Deutsch. Yeah, he gave a talk. What was the topic? I can't remember, but he's a former MIT chemist, which, by the way, MIT seems to be a little bit of a hub of deep state, along with Harvard. So Boston appears to have a strong, strong sort of deep state tie. So the MIT techies seem to have connections that you would not be proud of being part of if everyone knew. So Epstein focused a ton of his energy on MIT and Harvard. And you got the Stanford Internet Observatory, which I think they said they just closed down. But it was notoriously known for being, you know, censorship central, right? By the way, I'm reading a good book by Jonathan Turley about the battle for free speech. It goes all the way back to the founding of the Republic. And our image is that free speech has been sort of a core principle the whole way, and that's just not true. Not even close. The founding fathers couldn't agree on it. Adams was a douchebag. Jefferson actually seemed to be pro-free speech until he was in power, and then all of a sudden he started stepping on people with anti-sedition laws. Madison appeared to be the only real purist. Andrew Jackson was a complete cocksucker. I mean, he was a serious bad guy. Lincoln stretched the definition of free speech, and then you get to World War I, and all of a sudden Woodrow Wilson, these guys really went batshit on people who didn't support the war. They used to have, in a number of times in history, debates about whether you could defend yourself against a sedition law, anti-sedition law, by showing what you said was factual. And there was a debate about whether that was a legitimate defense. And so Turley, I'm not done with the book, but I know where he's heading. You can feel it being teed up for January 6th and things like that. Mm-hmm. You can feel him saying, okay, here is the historical backdrop. And I'm going, okay, I can smell the finish of this book coming. And the good news is that you will, I think I'll be able to draw the conclusion that we've been here before. This is not new. And we somehow survived. The bad news is if you listen to Turley a little bit on his book tour, the book's only about 3 weeks out, I think. He conveys that he's not sure we're going to pull out of this one. He's nervous. And he's brilliant. He is he should be on the Supreme Court. He is one of those guys who you go, that guy's qualified to be on the court.
Yeah. No, and I'm not sure if this was a clip taken out of context, but you had Tim Walz, that clip. I think he was on MSNBC a couple of years ago, but it resurfaced last week saying, I don't know if free speech, like absolute
well,
free
he's
speech.
Well, he's a douchebag, so.
Conclusion. Yeah.
I've had some of the problems with the stolen valor arguments. I still think some of that's not legit because he was in the National Guard for 20 some odd years. And apparently people in his unit are now coming out saying he's a douchebag, but you know, that's politics too. And, but he was in the National Guard for 24 years, something like that. And he left and ran for Congress. I'm going, that's a pretty good cover story. And then if you're as much of a douchebag as Walz, you could easily imagine that in 2005, you might be going, you know, I'm going to be sent to Iraq and I don't believe this war is valid.
Yeah.
I would like, and one can in retrospect say anybody could have made that argument because that war was not valid. But you can imagine a liberal puttyhead like Walz would actually have particular problems. So if he said, look, I've been thinking about running for Congress, I'm getting the fuck out of here. That's not stolen valor. Now, he has accepted credit and made statements about, you know, being in Bagram Air Force Base when he wasn't and shit like that. So he's done a share of lying, but well, a politician who lies, there's a shocker. So
yeah, I mean, that's been the frustrating thing about, I mean, it's typical in election season, presidential election season. Specifically, it's all counter character assassination attacks where it's like, can we talk about policy or at least pretend to?
Well, that's what I want to hear. I want to hear Dr. Seuss start talking about policy. And now some of her old clips are coming out. I'm just worried they're going to make a good enough case that Kamala or Cameltoe or whatever her name is strong enough that when they rig the election, we're going to have to accept it because they will have built a cover story that's good enough. Because I personally think that she wouldn't get more than 20 million votes.
No.
But
I mean, we've already seen that happen before.
Right. Right. And so I, by the way, you see the CEO of Smartmatic just got arrested.
I did see that for
And it was for foreign intervention, foreign elections. But I go, but that's the same fucking voting system from 2020. So, by the way, what people don't understand is that Dominion is owned by a company in Beijing. Dominion Voting is owned by Beijing. And so, you know,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a series of shell companies that goes through UBS and ends up in Beijing. Hmm. Yeah, that's not good news, is it?
No, the Smartmatic headline was they were essentially accepted money directly from like an incumbent party and rigged the election.
But they rigged an election.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's the same guys who say they didn't rig an election in 2020. Well, you know, I'm sorry, but that seems to be a problem. Maybe the Republicans are playing hardball and they got them arrested for that, knowing that they're going to have to make that case. I just will be surprised if Trump can get the election now. At first I thought there's no chance Kamala can catch him. And the DNC looked like it was in such a state of disrepair. But the speed with which they're now creating this buzz, using AI to make her crowds look real and things like that. I'm just worried that they're going to do it. And I'm just going
Well, yeah. I mean, lesser of two evils.
I'm just going to have to stop watching politics. I'm just going to have to stop watching. And that'll be my sanity retainer.
It's probably good. It's probably a good decision anyway, regardless of what happens. But I'm guilty of it just as much as you are.
So the question is, I guess my optimism on Trump was that he would get in there. The first term that he was there, he was too busy trying to get reelected. And so he was fighting them the whole way. The second term, he's going, fuck you. I'm not getting reelected anyway. So I'm going to do what I want to do. And I think that if he wasn't already committed to trying to achieve something that would make him great, I think almost getting assassinated might have given him a kind of a resolve that might be on a whole nother plane. And so I could imagine him wanting to say, okay, the gloves have now come off. Now, I have two opinions that are in terrible conflict of what Trump should do when he gets in there. One says, look, just push by all this bullshit and try to get something done. The other says, go round up the bad guys and hang them. And I don't think that latter view is the best move, but it's the one I'd love to see.
Yeah. And I don't think he would do that, but hopefully.
I don't think he would either. In fact, he almost acts like he doesn't give a fuck they tried to shoot him.
Right? It is.
It's surreal. He is a
hilarious character. He's like, yeah, they tried to kill me. They missed. It was terrible. I was down there. I ducked the bullets. They were flying over my head. I popped up, told everybody to fight.
Did you think it was fake when it first happened? Did you think it was fake?
No.
I thought it was fake when it first happened.
I thought it was a pellet gun. Because I was on Twitter as it was happening.
And now we're hearing all sorts of sketchy shit about crooks. Like he had been to the shooting range 48 times. It happens to be the shooting range where NSA agents and various FBI guys train. And I'm going, you know, if I went to a shooting range, the odds of picking that one is not very good.
No. And right? You had like,
especially in Pennsylvania. In Pennsylvania, if this was in Virginia, I'd say, okay, maybe.
And I think you had the Heritage Foundation find some phone metadata that he was corresponding with somebody whose GPS was pinging right next to an FBI office.
That's right. That's right. What they did is they actually looked at where his phone was getting pinged by ads. And they said, okay, let's look at all the devices where there are ads going into his home and all the device where the ads are getting pinged into his workplace. Which of those devices are in both places, which pretty much narrows it down to him. And those devices are also getting pinged by, you know, right at the FBI headquarters and shit like that. So, but none of this will matter. It will not matter.
No. And I hate that we have to end this because I can keep going for another hour, but I have to hop on a call. Let's catch up right after the election. We're pleasantly surprised.
Hopefully. That'd be good.
Yeah. Dave, it's always a pleasure.
Always fun. Tell me when you post it.
Okay. Well, probably Friday, maybe tomorrow.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
Okay. See you then.
All right. Thank you, sir.